And welcome into the Monday edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. That wasn't what we all had in mind coming off the bye week for the Packers. We'll jump into that here in a second. Still to come, longtime friend and one of the best NFL writers in the business, Tyler Dunn, will join me to help us take a look around the league, including Sunday's Raymond James Massacre. Also, the Indians, Warriors, and Clippers get some company as they welcome the Braves into the 3-1 club. The World Series is now set. And from hockey, The Voice is hanging up his headset, a tribute to the retiring Doc Emrick, before we say goodbye today as well. As always, you can interact with the show on the socials. We're at Doug Russell Pod on both Twitter and Instagram. You can search for the Doug Russell Podcast on Facebook or email the show at DougRussellPod@gmail.com. All right, let's jump right into our lead story today. Of course, it's the Packers getting drubbed by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at Raymond James Stadium. Things started out, though, so well for the Packers on Sunday. They jumped out to a 10-0 first quarter lead. Mason Crosby with a 39-yard field goal when their first drive stopped. The Packers do still, by the way, remain the only team in the NFL that has scored on every drive of every game this season. We thought Aaron Rodgers had a touchdown run. I still think it was a touchdown run. We've seen it on replay a number of times, but it was overturned. Aaron Jones then plunged in for a 10-0 lead after the PAT. But that was it. Aaron Rodgers.
I don't feel like we ever got into a rhythm, even the 10 points to start the game. You know, we had off-schedule plays to kind of keep drives alive. So they deserve credit. They got us out of our rhythm. They stopped the run early. And, you know, obviously I missed a few throws I usually hit. Felt good about both throws. Just, you know, missed the one slightly inside of Tay. And the other one looked like it was just tight coverage.
We never got into a very good rhythm. I don't think it was definitely not my best game in terms of getting in the personnel and play call into the huddle. We looked really slow getting out of the huddle, too. I think there was a lot of thinking going on. And if you just look back at our previous four games, we hadn't had a lot of mental errors, but you know, that falls on me.
Me being Packers coach Matt LaFleur. Now the turning point though, at least on the scoreboard, happened in the blink of an eye. Just the third pick six of Rodgers' Hall of Fame career. This one went to Bucs safety Jamel Dean.
I was really, when I saw the formation, then I seen how like everything started to develop. I'm like, I have to make this play because I know what's coming. And then once I saw him throw it, I was like, yeah, it's mine.
Like I said, I felt good about the spot. And I knew he was tight. We fit throws like that. I missed my spot by, you know, probably foot or so, and the kid made a good play.
That made it 10-7. The Packers still had the lead, but on the very next possession, Rodgers throws another almost pick six. This one, though, I put on Devontae Adams. He was returning to action for the first time in a month. Devontae let the ball slip right out of his hands and into the waiting arms of Tampa Bay's Mike Edwards, who took it down to the Green Bay 2. From there, after Ronald Jones just basically walked into the end zone, the Bucs were off to the races, winning 38-10 and throttling the Packers on both sides of the ball.
You know, the first one, I think Aaron threw with some anticipation and the corner squatted all over it. The guy made a good play. The second one, we had a miscommunication out there. We weren't in the right look. We were in a condensed formation. We should have been full width. And regardless, probably should have popped the timeout because I didn't look right. And sure enough, you know, the ball got batted around in there and got picked. And those were the significant part of the game.
But the root of the failures from the Packers' perspective, maybe complacency after a 4-0 start.
I will say that our practice this past week was not up to our standard that, you know, these guys have developed over the last year and a half. And that's what happened today. You know, you practice like crap and then you go out and play like crap.
Sometimes you have kind of rough weeks and you go out and light it up. And sometimes you have amazing weeks where everything's clicking. You know, you can't move the ball very well. But more times than not, I would say if you got a good week going, probably going to be pretty effective. If you're, you know, not having that great efficiency in practice, it usually doesn't come any easier on the field. Now, obviously that changes from time to time, but you know, I just think we need to have a better week of practice next week. We just need to take a good look at, you know, the way that sometimes our practice habits. A lot of times we talk about practice preparation equals game reality. That's something that Matt's talked about since the first day he got here. And I don't think our week of practice was that great. You know, offensively, I don't feel like we had a good rhythm. You know, we went outside, it was windy, it was colder. And, you know, I don't think we practiced our best this week and obviously didn't play our best.
As for the Buccaneers, they played a nearly flawless game and an aggressive one on defense. That was the charge from head coach Bruce Arians to his defensive coordinator, Todd Bowles.
Yeah, I thought Todd mixed it up really, really good with his fronts, blitzes, coverages. And you don't usually get Aaron confused. And that's one thing I don't think I've ever seen him confused. But when you start running him down and chasing him out of there, early in the game he chased out and he made a lot of plays. We just kept chasing him and hemmed him up a little bit and got some hits on him. But defensive line, linebackers played, and a secondary. It was a great defensive performance.
Going inside the numbers, maybe the best harbinger of success for any team, no penalties for Tom Brady and crew. Just the second time that's ever happened.
I think it's a big part of every team's success is not turning the ball over and then not committing penalties, which put you behind down and distance and take you out of your runs and your play actions. And, you know, all those hurt. So you got to be able to stay on track and stay ahead and down and distance. And, you know, that's the goal for the team.
As for Brady's numbers on the day, efficient. 17 of 27 for 166 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, a quarterback rating of 104.9. Ronald Jones, he was the big thorn in the Packers' side on the ground, 23 carries for 113 yards. That's a 4.9 yards per carry average. Jones also scoring 2 touchdowns on the day. Rob Gronkowski, he caught 5 balls for 78 yards, including his first touchdown as a Buccaneer. Chris Godwin, he was back on the field. He caught 5 balls for 48 yards. Ronald Jones out of the backfield, 2 receptions. Mike Evans, really the only Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive player that was completely kept in check, 1 reception for 10 yards for their outstanding wide receiver. As for the Packers, Aaron Rodgers, just 16 of 35 for 160 yards, no touchdowns, 2 interceptions, including the pick 6. The other interception, almost a pick 6. His quarterback rating, just 35.4. On the ground, not much to talk about. Jamal Williams, 4 carries for 34 yards. A.J. Dillon, the rookie, 5 carries for 31 yards. Aaron Jones, 10 carries for just 15 yards. Devontae Adams, your leading receiver, 6 receptions for 61 yards. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Aaron Jones, Robert Tonyan, each caught 3 balls apiece. So in the matter of a couple of hours on Sunday, the Packers went from looking almost unbeatable, one of the top teams in the entire NFL. It was the Packers, it was the Seahawks. That's what everybody was talking about around the league. They went from, in the matter of just a couple of minutes, they went from looking unbeaten to completely defeated. Now, were they overrated all along? That's going to be a question that is going to loom over this team maybe for the remainder of the season. Are they overrated, or is this just how good the Packers are?
You don't ever want to lose like this. I feel like we needed a little bit of a wake-up call at some point this season because things have been so good, and there's been so much talk maybe outside the building about the ease with which we're moving the ball on offense and scoring. And, you know, I think we need a kind of a kick in the ass a little bit as a little bit of a wake-up to stop feeling ourselves so much and get back to the things that got us to this position.
And that was just on offense. As for the defense, there's only one way to put it. It was putrid. The Packers didn't force a turnover. They barely touched Tom Brady in the entire game. Za'Darius and Preston Smith, the Smith brothers, no sacks, only 2 quarterback hits. Already mentioned Ronald Jones and his 4.9 yards per carry average. Tom Brady had all day long to pass. That's not winning football.
As soon as you get comfortable, you get your butt whipped. And I'm not saying that's what happened. Again, you got to give the Bucs all the credit. They came to play, and they beat us in every facet, you know, from coaching to playing. You know, just going out there, being more physical, executing. And I think everybody needs to be critical of themselves. And that's the only way you learn, and that's the only way you can bounce back and get better from this.
Joining us on the line now, good friend and longtime NFL writer, one of the best in the business. He used to cover the Packers for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel before he went national. Tyler Dunn joins us here on the Doug Russell Podcast. Tyler, appreciate the time. How are you doing today?
Doing great, Doug. Thanks so much for having me on, man. It's great to hear your voice again.
Absolutely. Great to talk to you again as well. So I guess for Packers fans, first and foremost, as best as you can tell, what the hell happened yesterday?
Wow, what a crash back to reality for Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers, huh? That was something else. I mean, that was really what we've kind of seen in a lot of these NFC Championship games for the quarterback, for the team, where, you know, a team gets a little pressure on them. They get them off the spot. They get a lead. They force a turnover or two, and the game just completely gets out of hand. I mean, that was just a clinic put on by Todd Bowles and that entire Buccaneers defense. I mean, you got to give him credit. I mean, Levante David is a legit star. I mean, he was all over the dang field. They're getting pressure. Ndamukong Suh's getting in Rodgers' head like whole times after the play. Jason Pierre-Paul, I mean, he can still get a pass rush. I think I'm looking at the numbers here. They had 13 quarterback hits in all. 5 sacks, so disruptive. The Packers offense just was out of sorts. I mean, that pick six changed the game. So I think, yeah, you have to be concerned if you're Green Bay, because like we saw last year, they went 13-3. They did a lot right. I mean, this offense, when it's in sync, when it's in rhythm, when the quarterback gets hot, they're as good as anybody, but they couldn't get past San Francisco. I mean, the 49ers just had their number. We see this with teams, with coordinators. When they get this team's number, it's tough for Green Bay to get over the hump. The Buccaneers might be that new team standing in Aaron Rodgers' way.
I want to talk more about the game in a second, but you mentioned a couple of guys, Ndamukong Suh, Jason Pierre-Paul, and on the other side of the ball, you got Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski. Boy, they are not afraid of veterans. They're not afraid of being the oldest team in the NFL, are they?
No, not at all. They're definitely going for it, you know, in the short term. And I think that every team is different. Every general manager / head coach's collective vision is different. And look at the Packers. I mean, they drafted a quarterback in the first round. They're trying to kind of bridge the present with the future. Where the Buccaneers, it's like when they got Tom Brady to commit and sign, they just decided to freaking go for it. And why not? I mean, they got veterans all over the field, yet I think they still have some youth. I mean, this is a team, let's face it, it's been pretty bad the last few years, so they've had some good picks. They've been able to really accumulate some young talent. I mean, you saw it out there, right? I mean, Devin White, I mean, he was all over the field. He got a couple hits himself on Rodgers. On the defensive backfield, Antoine Winfield Jr., which, I mean, just seeing that name makes us all feel old, I think.
Right.
The best defensive rookie in the NFL. I mean, he's been phenomenal, but you're right. I mean, they really incorporated a ton of veterans, and I think those veterans are really would take what could be a good team and make it a great team that could host the Super Bowl.
For the rest of the season, in your opinion, I mean, is this the blueprint that Todd Bowles, the defensive coordinator of the Buccaneers, is this the blueprint that other teams can use to defeat the Green Bay Packers?
I think so, and I think it's kind of been the blueprint for a while now. You have to be able to get pressure on Aaron Rodgers without blitzing all over the place. I mean, I remember when we were out there, Doug, on the beat, and it's like, you know, the Giants were able to do it at times. The 49ers were able to do it. Seattle was able to do it. If you can just – it's every team's blueprint, I guess, against a good quarterback. I mean, if a good quarterback is just going to eat up your blitz, I mean, they're going to see who's coming from where and take advantage of it. I mean, they can think quickly like that. Aaron Rodgers certainly can. But if you're able to just rattle them, get after them, confuse them with coverages and get pressure without needing to, you know, send the whole defense at them, he was lost. I mean, he looked bad. I mean, I get it. They were rolling. I mean, he was playing that first month of this season. It's about as well as Aaron Rodgers and this whole Packers offense has looked since I can remember. I mean, statistically, it's insane what they were doing, but it doesn't really matter if you're doing it against, you know, a Vikings team that clearly is falling apart and an Atlanta team that fired everybody, a week later. And, you know, you're doing it against these kind of teams and aren't necessarily going to be what you see in the playoffs. I mean, it's about the playoffs. It's about the Super Bowl for Rodgers, for the Packers. And they haven't been able to get past that upper echelon for quite some time. I mean, it's wild when you think about it. I mean, Seattle had their number with those Legion of Boom defenses, and then San Francisco. I mean, even Atlanta, I mean, with the offense they had with Kyle Shanahan, they just couldn't keep up. There's always another team. There's always another just a group of veterans, like you said, Doug, that just kind of stand in the way. And you wonder if it's Tampa Bay, because I don't know, if they faced again, what does Green Bay do differently the second time around? I mean, it was like a varsity team against a JV team out there yesterday.
Well, it was like the 49ers games last year, both in the regular season coming off the bye, ironically enough, and then in the NFC Championship game as it turned out, which kind of leads me into my next question. The fact that you look overall at Matt LaFleur's record as Packers head coach, and it's very good. 17-4 now in the regular season. And then you add a playoff win and a playoff loss last year. He's now got 5 losses to go along with, 18 wins. But 4 of those 5 losses have been absolute blowouts. What does that tell you about Matt LaFleur when his teams get down, that they're not even competitive?
It's got to be infuriating and a little depressing if you're a Packers fan. I mean, yeah, you're right. It's not even close. And I mean, I'm thinking back to that NFC Championship game last season, and it was like immediately, I know, I get it. The defense played terribly in that game. Raheem Mostert set all kinds of records, and But, I mean, that's an easy cop-out. I mean, Aaron Rodgers did not look good that day. That Packers offense did not look good that day. I mean, two fumbles, one loss, just out of sorts, no rhythm. Whether you want to put it on the quarterback, whether you want to put it on Matt LaFleur, I mean, that helped kind of snowball that game as well. And you saw the same thing against Tampa Bay. I mean, even more so against Tampa Bay, where you throw a pick six, you throw another pick, the game gets away from you. I mean, you've got one of the best running backs in the NFL, and Aaron Jones, and I think he had like 10 carries. They just weren't really able to get anything going on the ground. In that second quarter, everything just kind of fell apart. So I think it's difficult. I don't know if it's necessarily a shock, right? I mean, this is a front office fault that, I mean, actions speak louder than words. I mean, they drafted a quarterback in the first round. When you had Aaron Rodgers, you drafted a running back in A.J. Dillon, who I love, in the second round. I think this guy is going to be a star, but he's just not going to play a lot anytime soon. You take an H-back. You know, these draft picks don't suggest a front office thinking they're going to win the Super Bowl this year. I mean, I think they see a contender there, but they're not just going to sell out and sell, you know, and really go for it like Tampa Bay did. They're trying to bridge the present with the future. I think that they probably expected a game here, a game there, where it's a little rough. And I mean, that game is pretty much a sign that, you know, that's why they drafted Jordan Love. I mean, they clearly see signs of decline in Aaron Rodgers. If you're taking a quarterback, you don't draft a quarterback to sit him for half of a decade. You draft a quarterback in the first round to play him in a year, 2 years. And we're going to see these signs out of Aaron Rodgers that suggest, hey, maybe the end is a little sooner than everybody assumes. Is it time to write his obituary? No, but they're bridging the present with the future. It's not always going to be pretty, just like it wasn't always pretty going from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers. And I think this isn't necessarily a shock to management.
Looking into your crystal ball as best as you can, and I won't hold you to this because predictions are what predictions are, and, you know, I'm wrong with most of mine. But when all is said and done, this past draft that you talked about, Jordan Love in the first round, A.J. Dillon in the second round, an H-back, as you mentioned, in the third round. I mean, the two best players on offense in 2019 for a team that was one game away from the Super Bowl, the two best players were the quarterback and the running back in the Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Jones. You drafted their backups this year in the draft for a team that was one game away from the Super Bowl. But when all is said and done, in your opinion, will that have been the right move, do you think, for Brian Gutekunst and the Packers long term?
100% the right move. I loved it at the time. I didn't get why it was universally trashed. I mean, Doug, I mean, you saw the fan reaction. It was the fans hated it. The national pundits hated it. Aaron Rodgers hated it and basically said it himself, pull out the scotch.
Right.
Everybody hated it. But I think the good teams, the teams that win and sustain success year in and year out, they make these tough decisions. I mean, they make the unpopular decisions. People seem to hate comparing this to the Aaron Rodgers draft pick. I mean, Aaron Rodgers himself said it's nothing like that draft. I think there's similarities all over the place. I mean, this is a team, much like that team. You think back to that 05 draft, I think in 04 they went 10-6. The offense had like Donald Driver, Javon Walker, Amon Green. They're scoring points all over the place. But what happened in the playoffs the year before? They were bludgeoned by the Minnesota Vikings at home. Randy Moss is rubbing his behind up against your goalpost, embarrassing you. I mean, Ted Thompson didn't kid himself. He didn't say, oh my gosh, we're one or two weapons away from winning it all. Like, yeah, we've got this Hall of Fame quarterback in Brett Favre. Yeah, we've got weapons and we got a pretty good team. And if we win in the short term, awesome. But you got to think long term. I mean, you can't get caught up in the moment. And I remember back then, there were fans that wanted them to draft Brodney Poole. Probably most of your listeners have never even heard of Brodney Poole. You know? I mean, yeah, they wanted a receiver this draft. Great. Brian Gutekunst doesn't care he shouldn't care what fans think. They love Jordan Love. Is Jordan Love, like, going to be a Hall of Famer? I don't know. But nobody had a clue that Aaron Rodgers was going to be a Hall of Famer back in 05. I mean, there were legit concerns there. So they move up. They take the quarterback they believe in. They clearly did their research on him, you know, talking to everybody they could and watched a ton of tape, and they want to groom him to be the guy eventually. And maybe, yeah, they probably saw some signs of decline. Is it glaring? No. I mean, they went 13-3 and Rodgers played well, but they see something. I mean, their actions speak louder than their words. So I think it's a great move because it's these tough decisions that can pay off. And I think AJ Dillon is, you know, I'm sure that Matt LaFleur sees his own version of Derrick Henry and him, you know, somebody who's 240, 250, but can run a 4.5. Those kind of specimens just don't exist on the planet. And it's tough in the short term. Like I said, I mean, I don't think this is a shock. I think they expected there to be these moments where fans are clamoring, like, we need help in this spot or that spot. But I hate to say it, drafting a wide receiver in the first round isn't going to help you in that 38-10 loss against Tampa Bay. I mean, that doesn't make a difference in that game. Drafting a potential replacement for Aaron Rodgers and Jordan Love and somehow bridges the present with the future and allows you to keep winning and not go into the tank like we see with so many teams that lose a Hall of Fame quarterback and are scurrying in purgatory for year after year. That's the kind of decision that is going to keep a team winning. And I think that Brian Gutekunst, Matt LaFleur have a plan, have a vision, and people should believe in it.
I want to bounce around the division just for a second as well. Are the Bears as good as their 5-1 record would indicate? And are the Vikings as bad as their 1-5 record would indicate?
That's a great question. I don't think the Bears are probably as good as 5-1 indicates. I mean, you look offensively, and I don't really know what stands out to you. I mean, yeah, Nick Foles kind of brought a little magic. You know, there's these moments of his Super Bowl glory that tend to pop up here and there, and then you see him kind of overthrow that wide open receiver against Tampa Bay. I know they won that game, and then you see, you know, his passer rating, I think, is like 80.4. It's definitely at the bottom of starting quarterbacks in the NFL, and David Montgomery isn't necessarily a world beater at running back. Got like one run over 20 yards this year. And Allen Robinson might be the best receiver in the NFL, and it's like we don't even really get to see him maximize his talent. So I guess that'd be my short answer, but as we've seen before, it's like maybe it doesn't matter. I mean, their defense is so good that if they just kind of keep winning and if they somehow get a home playoff game, it only takes 2-3 games from a quarterback to get hot to win a Super Bowl. I mean, Nick Foles has done it before. So as long as they kind of keep winning the way they're winning, I mean, hell, yeah, they could go the distance. They did it before with the same quarterback. And as far as Minnesota, I do think they're probably that bad. I know they had some bad breaks against Seattle, Tennessee. But, man, this is just a team that you talk about vision and having a long-term plan. I think that's why I kind of love what Green Bay is doing is because Minnesota's plan just seems to be blowing up in their face. I mean, they convince themselves this year that they're contenders, and they extend Mike Zimmer and extend Kirk Cousins, and they re-up Dalvin Cook, which is a good move. He's very, very good. But on the flip side, you had to get rid of a lot of veterans on defense just to make the cap work. I mean, it's not like all these rookies in the secondary are magically going to be world beaters and all pros. I mean, there's glaring holes that they should have seen coming on defense, right? I mean, I don't know. If they were smart, the Vikings would have just kind of looked themselves in the mirror and blown the whole operation up. I mean, it's at the very least, draft a quarterback to put a little heat on Kirk Cousins. I mean, they got no competition behind him, and now it looks like they're going to have no choice but to move on from everybody when they easily could have done it earlier in the offseason.
And then there's the New York Jets. As we're recording this right now, I think Adam Gase is still employed, but I have no idea why.
Whew. Yeah, that's honestly, you know, I try not to watch too much New York Jets football. It's difficult on the eyes, difficult on the brain, physically, mentally, emotionally. Can just kind of put you in a bad mood. It's, you know, it's almost like when you're watching the news and there's some really crappy news that comes across and you just got that pit in your stomach, like, oh, God, I wish I didn't see or hear that. You know, my day would be a lot better if I never knew that awful thing that happened in the world happened. It's kind of like watching that 28-yard sack that Joe Flacco took. That was really, really pathetic, excruciating to watch. And I wanted to give Adam Gase a fair shot there in New York, because only because everybody was bashing it and making fun of his press conference and his eyes kind of going all over the place. It's like, all right, you know, if the Twitter mob is going one direction, I try to like go the other, because it's let's give this a shot. Maybe he is this quarterback. I hate to use the word guru, but maybe he knows how to work with quarterback, and we're all wrong. Well, Ryan Tannehill is number one in passer rating and 1 yards per attempt since he left Adam Gase, and Adam Gase has since run Sam Darnold and the Jets into the ground. So it's remarkable that he has a job and that they haven't just nuked that whole operation. And talk about vision, my guy. I mean, everything, the order of operations there, Doug, has just been so terrible, right? I mean, it's like they have a head coach, and then they add – a new GM after that, and they all kind of inherited Sam Darnold. It's like they just I don't know what the perfect order of operations is, but I know what the catastrophic order of operations is, and that's whatever the New York Jets have been doing the last couple of years.
Final thing is, we're joined by Tyler Dunn, longtime NFL writer here on the Doug Russell Podcast. All right, so the Titans are 5-0, the Steelers are 5-0, the Seahawks are 5-0. You still have the Chiefs hanging out. Kansas City, they've got one loss on the season. You've got, let's see, who else is hanging in there as well? Baltimore is 5-1 on the season right now. Your Buffalo Bills, 4-1 on the season. As best as you can tell right now, who do you have in the number one position, the pole position, if you will, for the best team in the NFL?
It's funny, it'll be interesting to see when people are listening to this podcast, but I'm going to go with the Kansas City Chiefs, and, you know, we'll see what happens against Buffalo later today, but, you know, until somebody knocks off the champs, it's Patrick Mahomes, it's Andy Reid, Tyreek Hill, hello, Le'Veon Bell, and this offense is just an absolute juggernaut. I don't know who stops them unless they stop themselves, because it's one of the best offenses in NFL history, and they're the best team in the NFL until further notice. But you know, I think it is pretty interesting what Pittsburgh and Tennessee are doing. I guess they play next, so that will be a must watch game next weekend. I mean, with Big Ben and that defense now together, it's like got to be a whole new world for the defense. I mean, last year they got Devlin Hodges, the Duck, on. You know, I come walking onto the field after they hold teams to punt after punt after punt after punt. To have an offense to actually lighten the scoreboard up is a whole new world for them. And the Titans just have something working for them. I don't know what it is. It's some teams just make the absolute right play at the crucial moment when they need it, and they've been doing that so far this season. And I think Mike Vrabel is just an unbelievable coach. Doesn't get enough credit. So keep an eye on both those teams too. It's all in the AFC, I guess, right? I mean, the AFC just seems so much stronger than the NFC right now.
No love for the Seahawks?
Good question. Man, I guess I overlooked the Seahawks. I think Russell Wilson's your MVP right now, right? I mean, he's just been playing out of his mind, and DK Metcalf is like this combination of Megatron, Randy Moss, Jerry Rice, pick whatever receiver you want. I mean, he has been unstoppable. It's just, I guess let's wait and see. Just because we've seen it in the playoffs since they won the Super Bowl, where it's like they kind of have to revert to Russell Wilson just turning it into backyard football, which is great. You know, that you can win a game that way. But can you win 3-4 games in a row against really good defenses that way? We'll see. I mean, it does seem so far like they have really just completely change their offense to fit what he does best, so you don't just kind of go into that mode late in the game. It's more in the flow of what Brian Schottenheimer and the entire offense is doing, but it's early. Let's see if they can kind of keep it up, because as good as he is and as good as Seattle's offense can be, it hasn't been able to sustain itself in the playoffs since they did win the Super Bowl.
He is Tyler Dunn. Follow him on Twitter at Ty Dunn, TYDUNNE, longtime NFL features writer. Tyler, great to catch up with you again. I appreciate the time so much on the podcast. Good luck to you and everyone out there in Buffalo, because I think you got a really good Bills team out there. I know you're a reporter, you're not a fan, but man, you got a fun football team out there.
Yeah, I've actually never been a Bills fan my whole life, which might surprise some family and friends, but whatever, they've got something cooking too, and maybe there are a lot of people that were wrong about Josh Allen. Let's give it some time though, right? Week to week league, things can change, and as the Bills fans here know, through 4-0 start from Trent Edwards and a 5-2 start from Ryan Fitzpatrick. Things can go south fast. So let's hope everybody can just kind of, you know, take a deep breath and let this thing play out.
And Ryan Fitzpatrick, by the way, Ryan Fitzpatrick and you, I think, are vying for, you know, best beard in the East as well, as he's still getting it done down there in Miami. Tyler, great stuff.
I got nothing. Tyler, great stuff. That's a whole different level, but thanks so much. To be mentioned in that beard company, Doug, is I'll carry that to my grave. That's amazing.
It's solid, man. It's as solid as you're riding, and I mean that in the best possible way. Tyler, appreciate the time. We'll talk again soon, pal.
Thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Turning the page to baseball, the World Series is finally set. It'll be the Dodgers taking on the Rays. This will be maybe the strangest World Series of all time for a couple of different reasons. Number one, it'll be the first neutral site World Series. It'll be played at the Texas Rangers' new stadium, Globe Life Field in Arlington. Fans will be in the stands, though, and after everything that's happened in baseball since March, we still wind up with the two best teams playing for the Commissioner's Trophy. This goes to show, however, that the wild card round is working and the best team during the regular season doesn't always win at all. For only the fourth time in the wild card era, so that's since 1995, the teams with the best record in each league will meet in the Fall Classic. Now, the Dodgers, they're back for the third time in four seasons. They're the first team to do that since the Yankees in the early part of the millennium. It's also the 63rd time in Major League history that a team has reached three World Series in a four-year span. Now, the difference between the Dodgers this time around and the Yankees back in 2000 to 2003, the Dodgers haven't won the World Series since 1988, which seems almost unfathomable because they've been, overall, the most consistent team in the regular season in that era. They've had some ups, they've had some downs, but specifically in the last decade or so, I mean, this has been really, during the regular season, the best team in the game. They also pay their players like they're the best team in baseball as well. Heading in, now everything was prorated this year, of course, but going into the season, you looked at the teams with the highest opening day payrolls, and still it's the Yankees with a $254 million payroll, but right behind the Yankees is the Dodgers with a $227 million payroll. As for the Tampa Bay Rays, a $72 million payroll. The Brewers, if you're interested, just over $100 million. But here's a statistic that could really blow your mind as well. For the 2020 season, now this is prorated dollars, Clayton Kershaw and Mookie Betts, two players on the Dodgers, made just over $26 million this year. The Tampa Bay Rays, as a team, made just over $28 million for all of their guys. So that goes to show you the payroll disparity between these two teams. It's nothing short of incredible what the Tampa Bay Rays have been able to do, if only their fans would take notice. I don't think that there has been a better team in a small market that draws nothing, and they haven't drawn anything really since they entered the American League. And they've got maybe the worst stadium in all of baseball in Tropicana Field, and they've been trying to get that replaced for years. I mean, the Oakland A's, they've been trying to get a new stadium for a long time. Meanwhile, like the Braves, the Rangers, they've got stadiums that are better than what the Rays or the A's have been playing in, and yet this is where Tampa Bay is. Hopefully, they'll get a new stadium. Certainly, the players on the field deserve to have fans watch what they do, because the Rays have been a pretty consistent team playing in a division that could be brutal, playing in a division with the Yankees, playing in a division with the Red Sox. I mean, Boston's payroll this year was just under $200 million as well. So that all having been said, with the payroll disparity in Major League Baseball, I think that the Rays have an absolute chance to win this World Series. They were outstanding in the regular season, and again, so were the Dodgers. And the Dodgers just have, for whatever reason, had a bugaboo about them when the World Series rolls around. But, you know, I remember that 1988 team. That was the year that Kirk Gibson took Dennis Eckersley over the fence in the bottom of the ninth inning in Game 1, and the A's were never right. That Dodgers team, for many years, was considered, and to some maybe still is, considered the worst team to ever win a World Series. Now, there wasn't the wild card round. They got hot at the end. Orel Hershiser was unhittable, really, in the month of September and then on into October as well. But they didn't have Kirk Gibson for the rest of the World Series. A misnomer is that Gibson was able to play at all after that one swing of the bat. He wasn't. He was able to limp around the bases, kind of one-handed the ball out into the right field pavilion out of Dodger Stadium, limped around the bases, and that was it. He wasn't able to play. But the A's were so demoralized that it was the Dodgers World Series to win, and they did wound up doing it. And with journeymen like Rick Dempsey was their catcher, for crying out loud, when Mike Socha was on the bench. Yet Mike Davis was on that team as well. I mean, this was a ragtag bunch of ball players. John Shelby was on that Dodgers team. The A's were supposed to just steamroll, and they weren't able to. So maybe the Dodgers will be able to do that, but Game 1 is coming up on Tuesday night. I'll be watching the World Series. Love the World Series, no matter who is in it. Am I rooting for anybody? Probably. You got to root for the Rays, I suppose, because they're such the underdogs, and they've only been to one other World Series, and that was back in 2008. So congratulations to both teams. By the way, the Dodgers, they give the Braves something to think about for the rest of the offseason as well. They were up, the Braves were, 3-1 in this series. And credit the Cleveland Indians, because you'll remember that the Indians, they were up on the Cubs in the World Series a couple of years ago, 3-1. The Indians, whomever their social media manager is, they get the gold star for the day, because the Indians tweeted out this morning, the 3-1 support group meets on Tuesdays, Braves fans. Well played at Indians, whomever their social media manager is. You can also throw the Golden State Warriors in there. So there's a few teams that have that 3-1 support group that needs to meet on Tuesdays. So well played for the Indians. That'll about do it for this edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. But we cannot leave without acknowledging maybe the best play-by-play announcer in all of sports. Certainly the best play-by-play announcer in hockey. Doc Emmerich. Mike Doc Emmerich announced earlier today that he's retiring after 3,750, well, they say 3,750 plus, professional and Olympic hockey games. They say 100 different verbs used to describe a pass or shot, 22 Stanley Cup finals. Mike Doc Emmerich announcing his retirement from broadcasting.
To the many who love this sport, it was 50 years ago this fall, with pen and pad in hand at Old Civic Arena in Pittsburgh, I got my first chance to cover the National Hockey League.
That was Mike Emmerich.
14 teams. Gordie Howe was a Red Wing. Bobby Hull was a Blackhawk. Bobby Orr was a Bruin. All three went to the Hockey Hall of Fame. Gordie Howe's son Mark and Bobby Hull's son Brett did too. At that time, there were still scoreboard clocks with sweep hands and a lot of players with good bare right hands. Time passed. Rosters expanded. The league did, too. Now 32 franchises.
Patrick Kane handed back.
Although I've decided to put down the play-by-play headset mic at NBC, and they have graciously allowed me to do some essays like this in the future, a time like this makes me recall that we have seen a lot together.
Snowy day, celebration of hockey in Buffalo.
Not all of our games had a roof.
Here comes Crosby.
12 years ago in Buffalo, there was the first replay through clouds from a plane.
21 seconds in.
And later, a winning goal through snow flurry.
Score! Penguins win!
Then 6 years later, two original six teams, Detroit and Toronto, and the biggest crowd ever, over 105,000 at Michigan Stadium.
Trying to win it.
And another shootout.
He scores! The Maple Leafs win!
5 years later, hearing the famous victory march at Notre Dame, and two more original Sixers, Boston and Chicago, walking over that fabled gridiron. We saw some Olympics, too.
Zach Parise out of a netball scramble!
A decade ago, a gold medal game that required overtime between the two North American powers in Vancouver.
Crosby scores! The gold medal to Canada!
And 4 years later, in a memorable game in Sochi, when the home team Russians saw an American named TJ Oshie score four times in a shootout.
Score!
Including the clincher.
Team USA wins!
I don't know about you, but I still get chills seeing the Stanley Cup. And knowing how professionals paid well during the season, forget everything, and raise pain thresholds above broken jaws, black eyes, stitches, and a lot we can't see to win a title and get the name their parents gave them engraved on this trophy. Oh, sure, things change over the 50 years. When I arrived, helmets were optional and then required of new players. Visors were optional and then required of new players. We went from one referee to two. Goal judges once sat in chairs behind the net. Now video replay helps make those calls.
We have a goal on the ice.
But much of what I love, perhaps what you love, is unchanged from then to now and into the years ahead. I love that coaches still yell and arguments can happen. I love that goalies can occasionally still score goals. That sentiment can't enter even into what number a player wears or gives up. That banners, like jerseys, aren't just cloth. They represent sacrifice. I love that when fans pay the price of admission in addition to the game, they can get to see kids get a lifetime memory. Get to see one of their number experience joy. Or get to be in on a surprise reunion of someone serving the country. And speaking of that, to have those who have served on the ice when the anthem is sung, I never tire of that, do you? And I especially love when the horn sounds and one playoff team has won and another, of course, hasn't. All hostility dissolves into that timeless, great display of sportsmanship, the handshake line. 60 years since I saw my first game, 50 years since I first reported on the NHL, 40 years of calling NHL games, and I am always heartened to see this.
Excellent series, Sid. Good job.
Come on, wins. I hope these days find you well. We are well here. In the meantime, I will be at home with Joyce and the pups.
It's a circus.
And perhaps in the future, I will have something to share with you, but hoping you can stay safe for now. And like me, watch for the start of next season. I leave you with sincere thanks, your hockey friend, Doc.
Well done, well played, Mike Doc Emmerich. That was tweeted out earlier today by NBC's NHL account. Just a vignette from the great one himself, maybe the best sports announcer of any sport of all time, but certainly the best hockey announcer we have ever been blessed with. And just watching him call Stanley Cup finals over the years has been incredible. So again, hats off to Mike Doc Emmerich, and hopefully he has a long, healthy, wonderful retirement. That'll about do it for this edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. As always, you can interact with the show on the socials. We're at Doug Russell Pod on both Twitter and Instagram. You can search for the Doug Russell Podcast on Facebook. Email the show at DougRussellPod@gmail.com. We're back on Wednesday with an Anything Goes Wednesday. Have a great Monday from all of us here at the Doug Russell Podcast.